Hi, I'm Darren Henson, and this is Inside Out, a podcast series by the Catholic Health Association on the inner life and the spirituality of healthcare leaders across the Catholic Health Ministry. I'm so pleased to be joined today by Rhonda Lehman. Rhonda serves as the president of the Lima Market and the Bon Secours Mercy Health System. Rhonda joined Mercy back in 1995 with a background in pharmacy. And Rhonda, I think you're one of the first pharmacists become executive and now regional president that I have ever met. And I can't wait to dive into that a little bit more today. But one of the uniquenesses about this podcast, well, there's lots of podcasts out there about leadership, about being an executive, about healthcare. We're really leaning into our identity at the Catholic Health Association in this sense of we're whole persons, and a part of what makes us whole is our deeper spiritual dimension. And so we want to talk a little bit about the spiritual life of executive leaders and how your own spirituality might play a part in all that you do for Bon Secours Mercy and therefore the Lima region. And so, Rhonda, first of all, welcome. And as we begin, I'm just wondering, how does this talk of spirituality resonate with you? What does that mean to have a spirituality for yourself?
Yeah, so for me, that spirituality for me is really following Christ. And that is, as you'll hear a little bit later, part of my upbringing. And so when I had the opportunity to serve in faith-based healthcare, it was such a natural fit and truly a calling to be able to live out my spiritual foundation in my vocation every day.
Yeah. Say a little bit more about that. So for you, it's following Christ. Who or what is Christ for you? We could spend a whole hour. Those of us like myself who have a background in theology, we have whole entire courses on the notion of Jesus, on the notion of Christ. And so for you, when you say it's following Christ, what does that look like, or what does that mean for you?
Yeah, so for me, that means a lot of different things. And it also means, you know, specifically in healthcare, really trying to embody what we learn about Jesus in the gospel and what we learned about his time here on earth and how we can embody that day to day in our interactions with people, and specifically in people that we're providing healthcare to. I think I went into healthcare in general, or to pharmacy, with this notion of it would be a good profession, admirable, trusted, those kinds of things. And it's been such a journey and a pleasure to see how that can feed my spiritual growth too. I probably didn't fully appreciate almost 30 years ago how working in a faith-based and in a mission-focused organization could feed me. And hopefully I can pour into that mission each day that we go to. You know, I was not raised Catholic. I'm not Catholic. But I also have just come to so fully and deeply appreciate the unity of Christ followers and the unity of that throughout all churches. And I think that's a huge part of Catholic healthcare, because we know that everyone that comes to us is not Catholic. But we have something really, really special to pour into people. And so to be able to do that from your top executive clear through, I think is critical to who we are.
Yeah. You know, Rhonda, I'm so glad that you put your finger on this idea that there's lots of us who come into Catholic healthcare from lots of different places and angles. And even though Bon Secours Mercy is a Catholic health ministry, we at the Catholic Health Association support the Catholic health systems and ministries across this country, we really are, in Catholic healthcare, an incredible example of ecumenism, because we draw together lots of other folks like yourself who are believers or followers of Christ Jesus, who see that as a part of something that resonates deeply with themselves, and yet also connect across denominational boundaries and lines, across Christian lines, to come together as one people who really see ourselves and our work as furthering the mission of Christ Jesus. I think it's one of the best examples in all of the Catholic world, at least, of ecumenism, of Christians working together for a common goal and with a common mission. And you're a part of that. And I love the way that you were, that you see yourself actively as contributing to this sense of oneness.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned it's been a journey, which I can imagine, of 30 years, starting with Mercy Health and Mercy then some years back merging with Bon Secours Mercy. Say a little bit more about that journey. Yeah. How have you noticed yourself shaped, growing, changing throughout that? And perhaps a little bit, I'm curious, how has, you know, being in a healthcare ministry, a healthcare setting that sees itself as a ministry, how has that shaped your spirituality along the way?
Well, so good. So I, you know, was part of actually Catholic Health Partners, then Mercy, then Bon Secours Mercy. And so I think about all these, this journey, and I smile now thinking back that many years ago at what I didn't know or understand at the time. And what I love is how this consistent thread that our healthcare ministry has had for so many years, and how I continue to try to pick that up and feel that in the way that my predecessors have. So throughout my career, I've had multiple leaders, right? Multiple mentors, a lot of people who've journeyed with me, many of whom are retired now. But I think about how their faith informed our work, or maybe didn't as much as I would have hoped. And so I feel like all along this journey, it was helping mold me into who I wanted to be as a leader and who I wanted to be as a faith-based leader. And thankfully, I have been poured into so richly by the ministry, and I really owe that to them, because I love the fact that no matter how long any of us have been here, we don't take for granted the importance of celebrating special days within our heritage, and really celebrating and reminding ourselves of the deep, deep history that we're rooted in. There was probably no better time to really feel that than during the pandemic several years ago, when I was new to this role, about 6 months in, and we have a global pandemic. And I'm so grateful that I understood just a fraction of what Catherine McCauley and other of the sisters had went through to build ourselves. And so there was a real part of me that knew people have been through terrible things in the past. We will overcome this as well through our faith and through journeying with Christ through this, and knowing that he is with us throughout that entire time. So I really feel like this rich, rich history over this past 30 years has really been what has been a foundation for me and a bedrock of understanding who we are. And I think of myself, and I heard this, you know, several years back, and I really identified with it. You know, I'm a torchbearer for a period of time. I'm a chapter in a really, really big book and a really, really long legacy. And I don't want to hold that too tightly. I want to be a best leader that I can be for this time that God has called me to be in this role. And then I want to leave it for the next person to carry that forward as tenderly and as reverently as I've tried to.
Inspiring, Rhonda. That's very inspiring. You referenced Catherine McCauley. For listeners who might not be familiar with the Mercy story, Catherine McCauley was the foundress of the Sisters of Mercy in Dublin, Ireland in the mid-1800s. Oh, no. And so is there a particular story of Catherine McCauley that you find yourself going back to?
Yes, so the people who are even better at these than me will have to forgive me if I mess any of the details up, but one of the stories that I think about is when the sisters first came to the United States to establish, we know that they were really, they didn't come here and start a hospital, right? They came here to serve people, so it usually involved teaching and orphans and being in the homes to care for people, which I think is, again, so rooted in community. And we need to get out of the establishment. And I think we can talk about that a little bit more too. Get out of these walls if we really want to understand what our calling is. But the story that I like is the one where, you know, the sisters were feeling overwhelmed, and they went to, I think it was the bishop, to say, we need more resources, we need more time, we need more of all these things to do what we've been asked to do here. And instead of like, you know, waving a magic wand and fixing and giving them these resources, he said, keep doing what you're doing. And by the way, I have all these orphans that need to go back with you. So here. And so he didn't only not kind of save them from it, but he actually kind of mounted onto them a little more work. And don't we all resonate with that? Don't we all feel at times like I'm asking for help and all that happens is we keep getting more? The sisters lived that. And they had to take that challenge and continue to do the good work. And so I resonate with that story, that we don't often get the answers to our problems. And sometimes we actually get a little more work. But that doesn't mean that the work is not so incredibly worthwhile or the answers won't come a different way.
Rhonda, one of the beauties of retelling stories, that's something that we often do in formation programs, is storytelling. And what I've learned over the years is it doesn't really matter if we get the details exactly correct in the story, because stories carry a meaning, like a deeper message. And it's that message, and you just pointed out, you know, that you connected it to your own lived experience and reality now, saying the sisters had this experience where they really needed help. They went to the bishop or some authority figure that they thought would help them, who simply said, you're doing really good work, encouraged them, and gave them more to do, if you will. And that's what you were experiencing in the pandemic. You started that story by saying, boy, I really had to rely upon the stories and the hardships that I had heard that the sisters had carried all those years.
Right.
And they were able to do it, and I can do it too.
Absolutely.
So what a great,
and how
what a great example that you're giving us as a leader of retelling the story, but telling it in a way that makes sense and gives more meaning and purpose to us today.
We're incredibly resource rich. We're resource rich wherever we're at. And we just have to be so mindful of that in our day-to-day concerns, complaints, workforce, new technologies. What we have is an abundance. It's an abundance by any measure. And we just have to figure out how to utilize that wisely.
And, yeah, I mean, you took the words out of my mouth. Coming from a position of abundance rather than scarcity, or rather than fear. You know, I mean, our brains are wired, evolutionary in some ways, to be scanning the horizon and the environment for threats, and that serves a purpose for us. It certainly has its place, but it can also really inhibit us when we bring it into our positions of leadership. And as you were telling the stories of the sisters, I could sense that you embody this in a new and fresh way today as a lay woman leader in a healthcare system, that even when more work is given to you, I bet those sisters took those orphans and took one another back to the orphanage and the convent, and those sisters cared for them, but those sisters also prayed, I bet, and tapped into their spirituality, just as I can sense you do as well, that you tapped into a sense of spirituality of abundance. And that really only comes when we sit with ourselves and we see, how is Christ present in me? How is Christ's light radiating even in the midst of challenging, difficult times?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Darren.
Yeah. How, so much of our spirituality, like a lot of things, has seeds that were sown really in our early years, perhaps, or at least influenced by the ways in the environment and the people and families around whom we grew up. Were there seeds of your own spirituality that you can see were sown in your youth years?
So many. Yes. I mean,
Can you tell us a few?
Yes. I'm very blessed to have grown up in church, if you will, to have grown up with parents that understood the value of that. I'm the youngest of four girls, and attending church and being active in our church. It was such a small church. I smile, you know, our family grew by leaps and bounds with four daughters and my parents and my aunt and everyone that attended there. And we all had a job. We all had a responsibility in the church. And so from a really young age, I smile now looking back because I have two teenagers and a 21-year-old myself. I smile about kind of how I would compel them to do these things. But my job was to play the piano for Sunday school. And so literally from the time I became proficient enough, I was there at 9:30 leading the kids through worship and music. And then when our church organist and pianist was no longer able to fulfill that role, transitioned to the upstairs. And to this day, I play the piano for our church every Sunday. And so being accustomed to hearing the stories, to hearing the good news, but one of my passions that I shared with you previous to this, Darren, was really in music and our hymns. And I find tremendous comfort in the words of hymns, particularly old hymns, but I have become more gravitating to some of the contemporary music too. But I will tell you, you know, heading to work during COVID or heading to work on any day that is really particularly challenged for me, I mean, that is what I tap into, is God's word through music. I find it so comforting. And then my family will tell you, going home and just sitting down at the piano for 30 or 45 minutes in the evening and having my own little personal concert is how I invest in that side of my spirituality as well.
Yeah. Playing piano is a spiritual practice.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. Sitting down, I had a little bit of piano as a young person myself. My sister was more the pianist than I was and still is a little bit to this day too. But there's something about playing an instrument. It's bodily. I mean, it obviously, if you're playing piano, it involves your fingers, your hands, even your legs, if you're using the pedal and things like that, certainly with the organ. But it does. Music comes from a really deep depth of the human person that is musical, mystical, spiritual. And how neat to hear that. I can imagine with all the things that you have to carry as a regional executive leader, that you have found this practice that goes all the way back to your youth to be something that brings you back to your center.
Absolutely.
Playing piano.
You know, back to the storytelling piece and music, one of my favorite, I have several hymn books, maybe others are familiar, that will lay out a hymn and then the story behind who wrote it on the adjacent page. And I love that because the stories of the people who are inspired to write music are so impactful. And again, just such a reminder of just God's faithfulness through people's lives, through tragedy, through joy, through, and I just dearly love being able to, you know, sing a hymn or play a hymn and understand the place that person came from when they were writing it. Things like It Is Well With My Soul and Precious Lord, Hold My Hand. There's so many hymns that have such profound stories behind them that really inspire me.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there one that you've been, you mentioned a couple there, but is there others that have been resonating with you lately?
Oh, you know, some of my old faithfuls I'll say is, you know, I love the hymn He Lives. I love Because He Lives. These are all Blessed Assurance. I mean, there's just no easier way to describe that comfort than a hymn like Blessed Assurance. So very familiar ones and a few that are mixed in there, maybe not quite as familiar that I love and will always love.
I think that's really inspiring. And I enjoy, I mean, that's something that I resonate with too. I mean, and I think a lot of listeners to this podcast can relate, but maybe in a different way. You know, I mean, there's pop culture songs that once we hear why the artist wrote or how the artist came to this song, You know, whether it's, you know, name your favorite pop artist. I'm really terrible at contemporary pop culture,
too,
you know, but like
Taylor
how
Smith
and why Lady
was
Gaga did this and when Lady Gaga teamed up with Tony Bennett, you know, and she found a connection with why he had sang that song and why it makes sense to her now and today. But the same is true even for these hymns. And some of us connect to these hymns and some folks connect to more contemporary songs.
Absolutely.
But music speaks to the soul in a way that words alone don't and cannot.
I agree.
We see, you know, many of us have probably seen on social media some of these clips of folks living with and suffering from a profound dementia of one sort or another. And then a loved one or a caregiver will play a piece of music from this person's history or youth, and the individual lights up, and the individual maybe can then sing and even like say the words of the song in a way that they can't, you know, when the music isn't playing. And so music really taps into us very, very deeply. And how amazing that you lead music and have for many, many, many years in a community.
I mentioned my aunt went to our church. My aunt was single and did not have any children. And so me and my sisters were her caregivers. In recent years, she just passed away in 2022. And she had very advanced dementia. And it was really hard. It was hard to go and see her when she was finally in a place of care. I didn't find those visits enjoyable, right? She didn't know me anymore. And it was hard. It was so hard to redirect her and to try to make an impact. And my escape would be I'd bring a hymnal and play on the piano that they had at the facility or sing to her, because I could connect with her in that way when I had no other way to connect. And she never forgot the words of those hymns till the day she died. She couldn't remember my name. She couldn't remember any of us. She really was very, very advanced. But I could start a hymn and she could finish it. And I'm just amazed at how God writes that on our hearts from such a young age, that even disease like that wasn't enough to erase those memories. And that was really profound. And you definitely hit the nail on the head when you said that, because we experienced that firsthand in our family.
What a gift I can imagine you were to your aunt. Even when she couldn't carry a conversation, you provided a way for her to carry the tune, to tap into a moment of connection between the two of you when the ordinary means that we might be used to in a conversation like this wasn't available anymore.
Yeah.
The Spirit's at work in moments like that.
Amen.
Rhonda, tell me a little bit about how you bring spirituality into your leadership as an executive.
Yeah.
Or, if we want to continue on the music, do you ever bring your music into your leadership?
Yes to both. So, you know, real quick to maybe put the bow on the music side of it. As many of you probably know, throughout the country, it's just getting harder and harder to find people who are trained in playing the piano or who are willing and available to do that. So I chuckle that I am the only market president in Bon Secours Mercy Health that also doubles as the pianist for all of our services. So while I'm always willing, I always say I'm happy to delegate that to someone else that would like to, but I play sometimes for our hospice remembrance services, for our founders days that we celebrate. And so I'll go down to the lobby and play our grand piano when we have our service. And I love being in the background, right? Because the piano player is behind the keyboard. And I like being a support when our spiritual team is leading us through those times. So it's fun for me. Usually every time we do it, we get a couple people that go, "She plays the piano too? Like what?" So I laugh about that. But bringing my own spirituality here, I mean, like every team, we have people who are on all different places in their faith and in their faith journey. And I aspire to be like the quote, you know, to live the gospel and when necessary use words, or preach the gospel when necessary use words, and really strive to make that in my actions louder than any words I could ever say about my faith and how I want to carry that ministry forward. But as people can probably tell from this podcast, I am wired as a bit of an extrovert. And so praying with people when they're open to that, it's something I do a lot and I feel really comfortable with. And I've had, you know, from a very early time in my career, I always ask permission, but I've sat with associates before and people that reported to me that were just brokenhearted over any number of things. And you can't fix everything for the people around you along the way. But what I learned early on was I could always pray for the people that reported to me or worked alongside me when I was at a loss for answers. God always has the answers. And when they don't come readily, he can give us peace. And so praying with my employees as they were open to that has been something that I've always been willing to let the Spirit move me towards. And I know that's not comfortable for everybody. I totally get it. And I'm trying to extend that again when it makes sense to our patients too, because I have a great relationship with our pastoral care services here and our mission team here. But I also realize that they might be shining the light, but it's all of us that lives that mission. And it's not their job to call upon patients. It's not their role to be the ones that offer the prayer, read the scripture every day. And so each morning we offer a prayer overhead. Probably a lot of hospitals do that. We rotate that amongst our executive team. So our clergy doesn't do that every day. They do it a lot of days, but we'll rotate and I will offer the prayer overhead. Or our chief operating officer will offer the prayer overhead, or our chief of HR. We want our staff and our people and our patients and the visitors to hear the mission is in all of us, not just our clergy and not just our spiritual care department. It's all of us that are carrying this forward.
Yeah. When your turn might come up to lead that prayer across the hospital, besides perhaps the text of some of those hymns that you referenced earlier, Do you have sources that you find yourself going to that are favorites or that you like to pull from?
Yeah, I get on the CHA website. I do. And I try to speak maybe to what the season is in the year, or maybe the temperature of the organization. Maybe there's something special that I feel like they need to hear. But probably the most important thing I try to do is maybe pray for someone very specifically. I'll say a group very specifically that maybe isn't always in the prayer, like campus police or the radiology techs. Or, I mean, because, you know, physicians, patients, families, staff is generic and good. But sometimes I'll pray for some people in some more specific groups. And let me tell you, when I see those people in the hall and they see me, they go, "You remembered us." Like, you remembered we're doing that work out here too. And so it's a great opportunity to get to kind of do a little shout out too of, we see you, you're doing great work. And it takes a lot of different roles to make this place hum. So yeah, lots of sources. And I look for my own internal inspiration.
That's a sign of just such excellent leadership, Rhonda. To bring yourself into also the prayer. We all pull prayer resources from different places or reflection from here, but to make it meaningful in the moment and to bring an element of ourself to it is really part of the secret sauce of making it meaningful. When you were saying too that you might mention campus security or the radiology techs, I couldn't help but think that's what Christ Jesus often did too. He saw people in the crowd, but then called out people from the crowd. Or he saw people who maybe were on the margins or, you know, kind of off to the side, and noted, yeah, you belong too. And so what I'm hearing you say is how you as a leader tap into your own spirituality to also help other people see and know that they belong, and that you reverence them and you value the contributions they're making to this wider ministry.
Thank you. That's kind of you to say. I should only be so good.
Yeah. Well, it's always a practice, right? You know, I mean, we're always continually practicing to be the best versions of ourselves that God created us to be.
Yep. And every day.
It does. It takes that daily practice. It takes that daily commitment on our part to tap into that for ourselves and to help enable others to do that as well. One thing I've noticed, Rhonda, is you mentioned journeying with your aunt in her last years, throughout much of her life, but especially the care and the accompaniment that you brought to her in her last years. You mentioned sometimes playing piano there in the ministry, even for folks who might be on hospice. And I was struck in the bio that you shared with us in prep for this, that right there in the first opening line or two describing the work that you lead as the market president, that you seek to enable that the mission flourishes all throughout this market, especially for those who are poor. And you mentioned those who are dying and those who are underserved. And it seems there's a tenderness that you bring and an attentiveness to hospice care, to maybe palliative care, to people who are aging and at the end of their life. Where does that come from, do you think, for you?
Oh, gosh. I feel like that's very kind of you because, I love Catholic healthcare and I love the values we espouse because it does capture the birth of someone and the incredibly important experience of that, as well as the passage into hopefully an eternity with Christ. And it can be such a awkward, I don't know if that's the word, or difficult time. And I don't know. I feel like that is something that we can just be present with each other in when words escape us or aren't available to us. We can be kind, we can be present, we can be loving to each other. And there's probably no greater time in my own life is when I've lost a loved one to have someone just show that tenderness and compassion. And the older we get, the more people we've lost normally, right? Where you can look around and see what made a difference to me in those circumstances. What were the gestures or what was just the presence that made a difference to me and my family? How can I try to do that for someone else? And I am not going to say I'm great at it or that it's easy, but I don't want to shy away from those things either. Because as true followers, I tell my parents this is kind of funny. I say, why, you know, when we talk about death and end of life, we get so upset and we cling so hard to this life. Don't get me wrong. I love our lives and I have no ill intent, but if we're real followers, we should be so excited about what's to come, right? That we cling so hard at end of life. And I'm not saying there's not so much sadness in so many circumstances, but as real followers of Christ, we should see that as just the necessary next step, the ultimate change of address that puts us alongside Jesus. And so however I can be a positive to that, I'll be open to it.
Very well said, Rhonda. There's not a lot of daylight between what you just said and really you articulated and summarized a Catholic view of how we view life, you know. Our ethics friends would remind us and say, at least in the Catholic tradition, yes, we absolutely reverence life and the dignity of human life at all stages. And we are not vitalist, that life in this Catholic tradition and in much of the Christian tradition, life is a good, but it's what we describe as a penultimate good, because the greatest good is sharing with God in eternity, is sharing our friendship with God in the eternal realm, not in this earthly. And exactly as you were saying, death is the doorway into that eternal union, if you will, with God in eternity. Thanks for opening that up for us and with us, just that attentiveness that you bring to really the lifespan and caring for folks through critical chronic illnesses and into that mystery of whenever one may pass through that doorway of death into eternity is such a hallmark of who we are as Catholics and in Catholic healthcare. And it's inspiring to see an executive leader like yourself really embodying the best and in many ways incredibly consistent view of this, the way that the sisters had as well, that we're going to journey with those in whatever conditions they find themselves. We're going to continue to support them and love them and, you know, provide the care that we can, even when there isn't curative care.
And that is the key right there. We can't fix everything.
Exactly.
We can't make everyone better. We can't save everyone. So who can we be in that moment? And that is what I want us to really focus on too.
I maybe want to look at another side of being an executive leader and your own spirituality. You know, you mentioned leading prayer occasionally across the intercom system within the facility. You also mentioned at times inviting members of your own team and some of your own employees into moments of prayer. And I'm also mindful that as an executive leader, you shoulder a lot of things and a lot of burdens, a lot of hardship. I've been in and led formation sessions with other executive leaders at a variety of systems. And sometimes we've touched upon and talked about what I might call the suffering of a leader, that a leader has to carry. There's certain things that you have to hold as a leader that you know, there might be changes coming forward. There might be some hard decisions that you have made as a leader that you may need to make in the future. There are times when there's necessary separation, let's say, or leave taking that happens. In those moments, has your spirituality helped you through that? If so, how?
Yes, so much so. And that's
maybe just for you, even as an individual, because you're right, you can't fix everybody else on your team.
Yeah.
But does your spirituality play a role in that for you?
Oh, 110%. I mean, I have countless stories through the years of decisions that outside looking in, this is inside out, right? But outside looking in, layoffs, reducing service lines, terminating employees. You know, my background is pharmacy. I had some of the most challenging drug diversion cases of people I know and love that became addicted and I had to terminate. There was, and no, nothing ever really prepared you for that aspect of leadership. And so, you know, and I mean, literally the stories could go on and on of challenges, not because I think this is an amazing place to live in ministry, but just because life is messy. People are messy and healthcare can be really hard. I mean, big churches can be really messy. I mean, there's always going to be hard decisions. And so here's my hallmark to those. And that is, I absolutely pray through these situations and I pray for resolution that is bigger and greater and more amazing than anything I could have ever envisioned. And I get delivery on those a lot of times. And sometimes the answer is, no, you're just going to have to do what you're going to do. But I'm going to be there with you, through that. I go back to this, whether we have to outsource a department, whether we have to reduce something, the decision may be the right decision for the larger ministry. And it should be the right decision for the larger ministry. And so my job as a leader is to be able to articulate that and communicate that in the very, very best way I can. I told someone just the other day, a physician stopped in and he needed me to sign something for him from a previous employment with us. And my assistant said, I've never met him before. And I said, the fact that he still likes me is like amazing. I said, because he was part of a practice that we had to offload, I'll say. I say, and I'll never forget driving down there and sitting down with him and saying, Doctor, we need to make this decision, but I want to do it with you because I think this is the best for our patients and this is why. There's another organization that's able to serve them better, has better capacity, has better resources for the type of patients served. And I've worked with them on making sure you have a role with them too because you have such an amazing skill and gift. And it's not going to be with us anymore. To God be the glory, because he took it like a champ. And quite honestly, he could have been really angry about that. And a lot of people would have been. But all these years later, he still serves that clientele. He still comes back and talks with me. And I hope and pray that that's a model, like I said, doesn't always go as planned, for just being authentic, being kind, being transparent, acknowledging that there's hurt feelings and maybe a lack of understanding. And maybe you still end up thinking it's a bad decision, but at least I could say you heard it directly, you saw it with compassion, and you knew it was human beings trying to do their best human job.
Yeah. Yeah. Rhonda, as you were recounting that story, you started by saying, gosh, when I have a really hard decision that you're going to have to make and or communicate to others, that you go in, if you will, before you go out. And you often go in, and you were saying you then ask God for God's help. Like, be with me here. Help me through this. Walk with me through this difficult time. And then, without skipping a beat, you then demonstrated to us how you then walked with the individual who may feel adversely impacted by the strategy that was being unfolded. I can't help but think that, you know, your own spiritual dimension helped kind of ease the way in a difficult situation for this physician. And here this physician is coming back into your office years later for, you know, some sort of ongoing collaboration or still needing and seeking your help and your advice. But that's, I think, a beauty of some of what we're uncovering in this podcast is how leaders can go in within themselves, tap into their own spirituality, whatever it is. Rhonda, in addition to playing piano and prayer, are there other things that kind of feed your spiritual life that you tap into from time to time?
Wow. So, I mean, I love, love, love to read. And so I do a lot of reading. I read a lot. I do. Not a ton. Of course, daily reflections, the Bible. I have Mornings with Jesus I read. I have the Upper Room that I read. So I definitely, Jesus Calling is on my phone. That pops up with my daily reflection, daily readings. I think that continues to feed my spirit day to day. So yes, I love to read. I'm part of a book club. It's not a Christian book club per se, but we read books that I think have a deeper meaning and certainly inspire us, whether it's historical fiction or what it may be. And that is another really great source, I feel like, because I feel like reading, even when it's not, you know, of the particular genre, if you're reading things that are expand your thinking, expand your mind, it takes you to all parts of the world and gives you a deeper understanding for the human condition, I'll say. And I think that even though, like I said, even if it's fictional, it can inform who you are and how you view the world. And so those are the kinds of books that our book club reads. It's not romance novels or you know, murder mysteries. It's books that have a deep, deep story to them. And I really enjoy that. I don't listen to a ton of podcasts, but I do have a few other authors that when I think about Christian authors that I subscribe to. I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of Father Greg Boyle, the Jesuit priest from California that I just think is the man. If you ever need any inspiration, listen to any of his stories and you'll go, this is an amazing individual doing amazing things. It's inspirational to me. I love Bob Goff. I don't know if you're familiar with Bob Goff, but whether it's his Bible studies that our church does a lot of or reading his book, it just fills me with a sense of joy. And there's a lot of sad things in the world. So I try to do a lot of things purposefully that remind me of the joy and the beauty in the world.
Yeah, that daily practice. Thank you for letting us in a little bit into your own daily practices. You know, the sisters who came before us and who founded these ministries had their daily prayers and routines. And a part of what we're uncovering through these conversations is what are modern day lay individuals who are leading these ministries, what are we doing in our own kind of ongoing, oftentimes daily spiritual practices? And so while the sisters might have heard and read the scriptures at Mass or morning prayer, you're saying, you know, you tap into the scriptures as well through your own prayer and sometimes through an app. And I know lots of us do. I certainly do as well, have my little app for the daily scripture or reading that I turn to as well. And you're right. There's so much that goes on in the world around us, in our ministries. And, you know, just a reminder to all of our friends and listeners, you know, the word gospel means good news. Okay. And it's like, yeah, oftentimes when we turn to it gives us a different perspective. It maybe widens, you know, what our mind is clinging to. It maybe reminds us that there is resurrection after death, that there is light in the midst of the darkness, that there is healing that comes forth from sickness. And those things can be such important reminders to us to help us as we then are in a helping industry to help others and to help, you know, our team members succeed as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks for giving us those glimpses. And reading. Yeah, you're right. It opens minds. And as we open minds, it can sink down and open our hearts too.
Absolutely.
Rhonda, is there anything on like what I might call a spiritual wish list that you have? Are there things that you want to do for your spiritual side that, you know, you have on someday I would like to do this, and maybe it has something to do with your own spiritual life? Or if you had to make something up, what would it be?
Oh, no. You actually, you know what? I as soon as you said that, I was like, well, yeah, I've never actually said that out loud. So now that I'm going to put that out in the universe, it's going to have to happen. But one of which is going to, I'll say, come true next spring when I'm going to be able to go and visit Rome, Italy, and see the Vatican and see some of the amazing, amazing points in the Christian history and places in our history. And so I am over the moon excited about that upcoming trip. And then on a very different trajectory, you know, you mentioned when you started, you know, thinking about reading my bio. And when I read my bio, I smile and think to myself, that's so good because that's the professional me. But, you know, from a very young age, I wanted to be a wife and a mother. And I've already mentioned I have three kids. And I poured and continue to pour my heart and soul into my family, whether it's my parents, my nieces and nephews, my own kids. And so for that reason, it was never an opportune time. That's my excuse to leave those responsibilities and go do any type of a mission work, mission trip, some of those kinds of things outside of the U.S. I love to travel and have done some, I'll say, peacekeeping mission work, which is really more about fellowship and friendship. But I would really love someday in my future to be able to serve a little bit in that wider mission field. Humbly, I will tell you, I worry that I don't have the skills that it takes because people that I know that go are doctors and nurses and carpenters and painters. And I think, do they need anyone that's just can play the piano or that can organize things really well? I don't know. But I'll let God answer that question as time goes on. But I see as my kids getting older, that may be an opportunity for me.
Well, if we had a lot more time, we could dive into the spirituality of being a mom, or how family shapes spirituality as well. But I'm glad you acknowledged family, because that is just another dimension and layer to who we are as individuals, but also to our spirit, how our family helps shape and enliven our sense of connection and meaning and seeing the spirit at work in our own households
That
is
has
an
been one of the most gratifying parts of my life. I got a text message this morning from my 21-year-old who's at college who said, "I had the most amazing God moment yesterday, Mom. I can't wait to tell you about it." And I'm like, "Ah." She started a on-campus ministry group called Delight Ministries at her college campus. Had hundreds of girls show up to study the Bible together and women. And I just to see that bounce back is. If there's nothing else you've given your children in your entire, or anyone in your entire universe, to raise all three of my kids, they know what their foundation is, and they know Christ personally. I've done my work on earth.
Rhonda, you mentioned when we briefly were chatting before this, you mentioned, I think you said something about publishing some spiritual reflections. What was
I
that?
did.
Is that something you did?
Yes, I did. I made an attempt, and then I found out just in the last few months that one of my submissions was accepted for publication. I've never been a writer. I'm an avid reader, but I was, and I have stories, but I never really usually reduce that to paper. And so, there was a couple of things. There's always a lot of stories of things that happen in the hospital. I just love. Love, love this ministry. And I tell my assistant, if I'm ever having a bad day, I go out and round on the floors. I'm good then. Because I see in action the goodness that happens and know that. And so I submitted to Upper Room just a short little story about a patient that I was visiting who is a prominent business member. And it's not unusual for me to get a, "Hey, so-and-so is in the hospital, will you go check on them?" HIPAA compliant, all of those good things, just a visit, just a social visit to say hello and see if there's anything I can do to help. And he was so scared of his upcoming procedure, and his wife was very much struggling herself physically and was not able to be with him. And so, as I already mentioned, it's kind of my nature. When I'm out of words, I say, "Well, let me just pray for you." And so I said to him, "Can I pray for you?" And he hesitated for just a second and said, "Sure." And so I prayed for him out loud, sitting there holding his hand. And when I got done, he looked at me and he said, "No one's ever prayed for me before." And I said, "I mean, this man's in his 80s." And I said, "Oh, I'm sure they have." And he said, "No one's ever prayed for me." And I was so taken aback to think that that could be someone's life and their journey is to never have experienced that tenderness from, and he's loved and adored by so many people. There's a difference between being friendly, kind, and really crossing over and helping someone see this world in the way that I've been blessed to see it. I kid you not, Darren, yesterday, almost the exact same scenario happened here. And what I found out later, this is really blows my mind. Someone called me, said so and so's in the hospital. It doesn't look good. He's been an alcoholic his whole life, Rhonda. I know him just very peripherally, and the prognosis looks really grim. And when I went up to see him, it's his wife that I know better, and she wasn't there, of course, right? She went home, so it was just me and him. And the first thing he said to me was, "I remember visiting the church when you were a little kid. You were playing the piano." And I laughed. I thought, well, he's kind of opened it up. He's opened this door up for me to talk about his memory of me was associated with a church that he never really went to, and he didn't really come regularly. And he was so scared laying in that bed. And he does not know what I mean, he probably has months, not years left. And I said to him, would it be okay if I said a prayer with you before I left? And he nodded. So I prayed. And you know what? If it was between me and him and God, that's it. I don't need to tell the person who told me to stop by. I prayed with him. It's his to tell if he wants to tell. What I found out today was that he'd refused clergy yesterday. Said he didn't want to see anyone in clergy. And when I offered to pray, when I opened my eyes, the tears were just streaming down his face. And as soon as his wife came back, he told her, who told my friend, who came full circle back, and I said, it's not the reason I did it. It could have stayed right there at his bedside. But I hope it made a difference.
And you can only answer the call of the Spirit when you're attentive to the Spirit within you, and then to the way the Spirit is moving throughout our relationships with and among one another.
Yeah. So that was the type of story that I sent that was published.
The
premise was, don't just pray in the dark. Maybe sometimes you need to go to the person and look at them and go, I'm praying with you. I'm praying for you. Let them know. It's really impactful.
Yeah. There's lots more for us to unpack there at some point, but beautiful, Rhonda.
Thank you.
That ministry of praying for one another, that I want to entrust you to our God who loves us, who created us, who's calling us back home at some point.
Absolutely.
Who's walking with us here and now, and who loved us into being. And I just want to offer some prayer for you.
And it's never too late.
I'm grateful for the way that you have found the way that you continue to nurture the way that Christ light mixes within you, so that way you can continue to offer healing therapies, whether it's by your own actions, whether it's by your own prayer and words, or whether it's the way that you're a leader in Catholic healthcare. So
thank you, Darren. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this time here.
Thank you. I'm humbled for the opportunity, because truly I feel very, very blessed to be able to serve. And I am absolutely a work in progress. I don't get it right all the time, but I am praying to be better each day with God's guidance.
That's a great way to sum this up here today. We are all a work in progress. And as we say here in Catholic healthcare and with regards to formation, we're never done. Formation is, we're always in the process of being formed into the most wonderful, glorious person that God dreamed each of us to be as individuals, and as individuals living in community with and among one another. Thanks so much for this time, Rhonda.
Thank you.
And maybe when you get back from Rome, from really what is a pilgrimage and what will be chocked full of spiritual time, of spiritual encounters and nourishment, maybe we'll have you back and have you share a little bit about how your spirituality was nourished by that experience as well.
I would love that. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Rhonda. What a true blessing it's been.